This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. It's time to step up to the plate with two birds on a bat with Jim, Steve, and Fish.
A swing and a miss, and that's the winner! That's the winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!
And there that is! In the left field! It's number 3,000! A run is scored!
Smith corks one into right down the line! It may go! Go crazy, folks! Go crazy!
A high pop ball! The Cardinals are! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant!
Breeze hits it in the air to center. We will see you tomorrow night.
Swing and a miss! The Cardinals are world champions for 2006.
In the air to left, well hit. Back is Craig. What a team. What a ride. The Cardinals are world champs in 2011.
What a team, what a ride. Wow, that's great stuff. What do you guys think of that intro, newly, freshly, right out of the box?
I'm watching you two clowns. You got your hair sticking up on your arms. I'm glad I shaved my arms, man. It's I got a little reprieve from that.
Great stuff from producer Brian. Very proud to have that as our intro. What'd you think, Fish? You get some goosebumps over there?
I absolutely loved it, except for the usual hit for his 3,000th. I remember all those. I mean, growing up, I remember the rest of those things sitting there and go crazy, folks, and that's a winner, and see you tomorrow night. It's wonderful.
Hey, I remember where I was for every one of those, obviously, except for the usual hit. I remember where I was exactly for all those.
Maybe we just do a show of 45 minutes of just great Cardinal calls and be done with it, huh?
Well, isn't it amazing? You could. That's what's great about this franchise. You could.
Yeah, you could. And if, you know how I like to bash the Cubs? They could do one for 45 seconds.
Oh boy!
But we could do one for 45 minutes with the Cardinals.
Well, it is a great franchise, and I know I'm very proud to be a part of this show. Two birds on a bat. You know, we are your everyday man's Cardinal podcast. Three fans sitting around talking baseball, just like you would if you were sitting down at the local watering hole or, you know, on break at work, wherever you may be. We know everybody loves to talk about this great franchise with its wonderful history, and just couldn't be happier with the intro. And I think it captured some of the great stuff. You know, what's amazing is you guys, you know, out there in listener land, we did this. We sat around. We went through what we were going to use. And, I mean, we literally had to chop stuff because there's so much. I mean, Gibson's Gibson stuff's not on there. The home run by Clark, which is still – I mean, David Freese's home run in the World Series is probably one of my all-time top Cardinal events. But Jack Clark's home run in 85 against Niedenfuhr, I remember where I was not only when I saw – I mean, I remember what position I was laying in on the bed and the whole bit when I watched it.
What did we find out? Niedenfuhr gave up like three big bombs to the Cardinals. I mean, like huge. The Smith, the Clark. Who was the other one we found?
Was it Tommy Hersgrantz? Did he give up Tommy? No, that was the Mets.
We mentioned it the other day.
God, who was it? God darn it. Oh, Willie McGee.
Willie McGee
home run.
Because I'm sitting here thinking, well, there's a guy we got to get to come on the show, Tom Niedenfuhr. Talk about a few of these bombs.
He would serve them up. I mean, the guy was, he was untouchable. And then all of a sudden, the Cardinals in a big pressure situation. I don't know if that's a choke on his part or just a – how would you describe that? Would you say – when you're getting into a situation like that, all right, from a Cardinals fan, are you saying, hey, we know what the Dodgers guys are saying. They're saying, oh, this guy sucks. He gives up all these big home runs. But as a Cardinal fan, are you saying, boy, that Ozzie Smith, he comes through in the clutch, one out of every 4,000 at-bats left-handed.
Well, I think that's the key. I don't know how much you love Ozzie, and I do too. But when you give one up to Clark, you know, it is what it is. Clark hits home runs against other guys. When you give up one to McGee, you know, he hits some home runs. I mean, in the spots. When you start giving them up to Ozzie, as much as we love him.
Left-handed.
You got to – right-handed, I don't care. Middle-handed.
Yeah.
I mean, Ozzie didn't hit no many home runs, no matter where he was hitting them. But when you give up one to Ozzie, you got to start seeing the man choked. But then it's Ozzie's greatness, too, to be able to rise up and above as an athlete and do things that others didn't in spots, or he wouldn't be Ozzie Smith if he didn't make all these great plays, hits.
Now, going back, and you guys know I'm a big Ozzie guy.
No.
Really? Yeah. But here's the deal. if he doesn't have that home run in 85,
okay,
is he as big in St. Louis lore as he is today?
Oh, yeah. You absolutely. Think? Absolutely.
I mean, you had never – I know – well, shoot, I was young, but, man, even today, I mean, you just don't see – I mean, it seemed like – I know it wasn't every game, but it seemed like he made an unbelievable defensive play every game. If like you know, that was – hell, man, we are getting old. That was 30 years ago. But you know what? It seemed 30-plus years ago. But now, and if my memory serves me correct, which it does not, he made a diving play every game.
Well, you know, having said that, the first thing I think of Ozzie Smith when I think of him is not that home run. It's defense, and it probably should be that way. But the catches he made, remember that he was in San Diego still. When he dove, the ball took a bad hop. He reached up barehanded.
Off Jeff Burrows.
Caught it barehanded. Jumped, well, that kind of dilutes the story because he had about 2.5 weeks to throw him out, with it being Jeff Burrows.
Exactly.
But, I mean, he bounces up. He throws the gun. Remember the one where he dove out in front of maybe Vince Coleman?
Kurt Ford.
Yeah. Where they're racing together and it looks like we're about to lose two players. I mean, that's what I think of, not the home run.
Now, he did say that that is one of the only plays he made that he rushed back into the clubhouse to see how he made it. That he went back in and watched video on it because he goes, there's no way I could have made that play.
Well, I did see something when they were talking to him about it, like after he retired, and he said, you know, a lot of people think, you know, some of it was luck. He goes, but we did used to talk because, you know, he goes, I had that kind of range to go out and get balls. So I would say, listen, if we ever think we're going to collide, you go low, I'll go high. He goes, that's the only reason why we both didn't wind up in an ambulance.
Yeah, I remember that, but I will tell you this. If Ozzie Smith said some of it may have been luck, he's trying to be very humble.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing lucky about the things he did. I mean, it was great talent. It was playing every day. It was playing with desire. It wasn't luck.
And I get it, but I look at some of these plays that these guys make today, the range that they have, and I think really the difference is their arm strength. I mean, Ozzie threw the ball, what, about 58 miles an hour?
Maybe.
And these guys are – I mean, I saw Nunez make a play for the Giants last night, off balance, going, you know, across third base line, and he throws just an absolute piss rocket across the field and gets a guy by four steps.
Well, it was Burrows running again. I think that's a problem.
But you know what? Anytime a conversation – we just had it on Bleacher Bums. Anytime a conversation turns to could Babe Ruth have played today, blah, 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 and it always inevitably goes to, well, they're bigger, stronger, faster. Well, I just said it. I mean, this was almost 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay, so Ozzie Smith, you know, I'm not going to say there weren't great defensive players, but he took unbelievable pride. And, like, I used to love to, like, listen to him talk or any of the players because, I mean, I just love to do it. But, you know, he took a lot of pride in the fact that what he felt like he did amazingly better than everybody else was, it was fielding was one thing, but his ability to get it and get rid of it, because he admittedly said, I didn't have the greatest arm. That's when I decided to start using the turf on throws and started to do things. So, again, I say, in this day and age, maybe Ozzie Smith spends 5 years of his young adult life in the offseason working on arm strength and doing all this stuff.
That's a great point, yeah. Because really the key to Ozzie in that was how quick he got rid of it. You're the Ozzie guy, Steve-O. You tell me then. He played about the last 4 or 5 years in the league with a bad arm. Not just that he didn't have a good arm.
It was torn. He had a torn rotator cuff, didn't he?
But I mean, I can, and I think everybody out there who's watched him turn a double play, is there any faster hands and release? And that ball, like I said, it's 58 miles an hour, and it gets over there every time for now. But it's so quick, in and out of the glove and out with nothing behind it. Now these guys come across, and they're throwing 104 across the diamond.
Two of the coolest things I've ever seen when it came to Ozzie. Obviously, the plays during the games are great, but things that were not plays were, number one, I saw him, you know, obviously when he was one of the best players in the league, they do all these specials on him, and it may have been like it wasn't Harold. I don't know who it was at the time, but they showed up, and they were talking to him about how he played the game, and he was fielding balls at short. And he was like, you know, and Ozzie was cool. I mean, he does like to be cool, right? He would be fielding these balls, and he would never look to second base, and he would feel them and flip them over there and would never look over there. And it was the smoothest, coolest-looking thing I've ever seen. That was I just remember thinking, this is a guy that's done it a million times, and
You'd
he just wants to do it on feel. And then as I got to the point in my life where I could start going to games, like with friends, you know, in those 80s, We sat down. We had decent seats, and you were able to walk down to the Cardinal dugout before the game. And he and Jose Oquendo played catch right out in front of the dugout. And I remember watching him, and you know, obviously in awe, because here's Ozzie Smith, and I loved Jose Oquendo, who didn't. But when they played catch, it looked like the ball never touched their glove. They would pick it off their glove with their bare hand. It almost looked like it never went in the glove. And I remember thinking, God, how do they do that? I mean, it's just amazing how good these guys were. And again, we talked about the pride that he took in his defense. It was obvious nobody probably worked harder.
Here's the other thing I want to say about Ozzie. And it's like, how much separation do you have as a player from the rest of the people in the league while you're playing? Like, an example, the year Babe Ruth hit 60 home runs and the rest of the league didn't hit 60. There's a pretty big separation there. So you talk about today's players that are great defensively, and Steve-O, there's no doubt they're bigger, stronger, faster, got better arms and all that. But look at the separation between Ozzie Smith's defense at short and his prime and the rest of the league. Because there was nobody even remotely close to being as good defensively as Ozzie Smith in his prime in the league while he played.
Agreed. And I guess, you know, we were, if you remember right there, they were ushering in the new shortstop prototype that we have today. The guy, the Cal Ripken, was the one who was like the anti-Ozzie Smith. You know, he hit for power. He's 6 foot. What was Ripken?
Just make all the routine plays.
Make all the routine plays, or even some of the routine plays that Ozzie would get to. You know, Cal maybe had a dive at, but you know, all of a sudden that led into your bigger shortstops with power. You know, and you didn't see a whole lot of guys outside of like Omar Vizquel.
Barry Larkin was pretty good.
Larkin, you know, there, you can go through and name some guys, but Hall of Famers, both those guys Hall of Famers.
Well, sure,
right?
and yeah, listen, I think Fish, you know, his point in the separation, this guy won 13 consecutive Gold Gloves. 13 seasons in a row, the best shortstop in the league. Now, we can talk about, did he win a couple of those on history and things like that? I'm not here to say.
On reputation.
Yeah, but who hasn't?
That's right. Mike
Everybody
Schmidt
that's won a bunch,
yeah,
won a bunch that
that's
way.
Right. But to be considered the best defensive player at the probably, I mean, let's face it, you bring in any baseball guy right now, how are they going to tell you they're going to build their team? They're going to build it right up the middle.
Yep.
Right? To win 13 consecutive Gold Gloves at arguably the toughest defensive position on the field, albeit catcher, center field, I understand both. Come on.
Well, center's not close. Catcher is.
Yeah.
You can make that up.
Now, does this mean that last week we went to the center field talk?
Right.
Now we're at the shortstop talk. Are we going catcher next week? Is that what we got? Are we going to start debating?
Well, I mean, listen.
Yeah, let's do it, because I got a bunch of stuff to talk about Ted Simmons.
Oh,
and why he should be
Simba
in the Hall of Fame.
Well, I don't know that there's any doubt he maybe should be in the Hall of Fame, but this is what I'm talking about with our show, and I think what we're trying to get across to everybody is these are some of the great conversations that you could have, and we are lucky to have this storied franchise where there are so many great topics to come up. And, of course, if you guys are enjoying the show, okay, make sure you guys subscribe to the show. It is free. It's the easiest thing in the world to do. You just go to iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, or any major podcast outlet. Just click the subscribe button, and that'll give you an opportunity to leave us a rating because it's the best way to stay in tune with the show. Now, right now, we're under that Bleacher Brum umbrella because we're developing all of our stuff. But it won't be long. We'll be standing on our own as two birds on a bat. Make sure you keep communicating. We do have our Twitter account set up, and we're doing well.
Yep.
We got people starting to find us. We're finding other Cardinal fans out there. Birds on a Bat Show is our Twitter handle, at Birds on a Bat Show. So really appreciate everybody doing that.
Hey, we do appreciate you folks out there in podcast land listening and downloading our show, and I promise you this, you give us a year or two and we're going to say something that makes sense. Just stay with us.
It might take 2 years.
Whatever, but we're eventually going to say something that somebody's going to say, you know what, these guys finally got it right.
Yeah, it's easy to find us. You can go to lineupmedia.fm. We got a whole array of shows out there, almost something for everybody's taste. I know I do a Cowboys podcast, Dallas Cowboys. I'm also a huge Cowboys fan. So Jono and myself do a Cowboys podcast once, twice a week. So that's kind of taken off. We got the MMA one. We got the Bleacher Bums, which we're under right now. I know there's a professional women's one. What else we got out there, Jimmy? We got the Youth Baseball Talk. I love Domingo Ayala, who you've had on there.
He's my, great,
probably my favorite character of all time. And the guy might look like a joke. But you talk about Ozzie Smith getting that ball out. I seen the video with him. His hands are so quick. He's legit. He's big time.
Big Tine.
Big Tine.
Big Tine. Big Tine. Tine.
He's a good God-given.
God-given. He's a good one. But no, you're right. Yeah. Lineupmedia.fm, great shows. You know what I always say? Your entertainment is valuable. You know, your time is valuable. So if you're going to spend your time with it, I guarantee you, give them a chance. Lineupmedia.fm, you're going to find something that that interests you. Well, how's our Cardinals doing? I mean, we did take 2 of 3 in Milwaukee, but I got to be honest with you, it was painful.
We
had to come back and win a game, right? And then we lose. If you ever felt like you should have swept, and heck, you almost lost 2 of 3.
We really needed. We talked about this on the early show on Monday. We were hoping for 5 out of 6, I think, on these next 6 games.
Well, you could have got 3.
You could have gotten
painful.
3. And I think these next 3 are very important because then you go into Pittsburgh and they roll out a no-name pitcher. I'll say no-name, but we talked about it last week. They're going to roll out a guy that we should, for all intents and purposes, hit the crap out of on Monday. And going against Waino. You know, so that's going to be a big game on Monday. So, you know, if we can pick up these 3 here, you gotta take 2 of 3. But then you got to go into Pittsburgh and handle your business.
See, 2 or 3 against the Reds puts me right on the number 1 and 4 6.
Right.
I mean, I think that's realistic to start thinking 5, 6. Hey, it's baseball, man. It's hard to win 5 out of 6 or 6 out of 6. Remember what I said about Wainwright, though? About he'll figure out a way to get people out.
You're right.
He was beautiful.
He was.
This is what I'm saying. I don't think that his stuff now is as good as Martinez and some of the others, but he figured out a way to get people out, and I think that he'll do that down the stretch and in the playoffs. I really do.
Well, we brought up the whole Tony La Russa mentality that he brought to the Cardinals to just win the series. So, you know, again, they did take 2 of 3, no matter how they did it. If they could get 2 of 3 here. I mean, I guess the question becomes, if they were to win every series here on out, would you like their chances?
Yes.
You know. Is that enough to get it done? You'd have to believe so.
30 games, what do we say, 30 games left
30
right
games
now?
Left. Mm-hmm. 30 games left.
So
if you won 20 of them, I mean, does that get you in?
I don't know, Jimmy. That's not fair. I'm going to have to get a calculator out and start doing some math.
That's 90
here.
Wins.
Hey, Fish has
a 90 wins get us in. There you go. There you go. Well, they're at 70 wins right now. Does 90 wins get you in?
Fish, you can put your socks back on.
I'm telling you. Heck, I can't do all this number.
Here, I just made it easy for you. Does 90 wins get you in?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a fair number. But, you know, because it's baseball, you know, one of these teams are Pittsburgh. You know, these guys go on a tear where they win 23 out of 30. I mean, it's tough. Who knows?
Yeah, we caught a little luck.
Gotta keep playing.
Yeah, I mean, we caught stuff. But, you know, the team that's out nipping at our heels now is the Mets. And, you know, Neil Walker's gone down. You know, but now they're pitching starting to come back around. I mean, Bartolo Colon continues to defy the age.
You love that, Bartolo Colon.
Yeah, because I picked him up in fantasy for nothing, yeah.
Syndergaard and DeGrom are getting rocked, but Bartolo Colon just hits home runs and pitches lights out.
How can you not like him? I mean, just based on his shape and size,
we
you
can
like him.
We can because it's 3 fat guys in
right.
here. And he's over 40, right? So there's three fat guys over 40 love Bartolo Colon.
40, I think he's 57. I mean, he's like Satchel Paige.
He might be.
He might be.
He might be. Washington's pulled away in the East, so these Mets are fighting for their wild card lives. And like I said, they make me nervous because I still feel like no matter what happens – out in the West, that, you know, ultimately we're fighting for that second spot. So the Mets are the team that concerns me the most, but I guess we'll have to see how that plays out.
Remember the rival we used to have with the Mets in the 80s?
Oh.
I mean, that's what splitting these divisions up and doing stuff.
The Mets are Ponscum.
Oh, yeah, I owned a T-shirt that said Ponscum on it.
That's right.
I had a real good friend that was a Mets fan, and I think I got my driver's license wearing a Mets batting practice jersey.
Why would you do that?
I don't know. But I think I spent a night over his house, and we had to get up and get a driver's license the next morning. That's what I wore.
I think I brought up one of my favorite moments when we were talking about the wild card and when they were and how important it was to win your division. I remember being I was sitting out in right field when Danny Cox threw that gem, and everybody standing up and waving the shirts and everything. You know, the greatest part about that evening that I didn't bring up was, and most of you Cardinal fans are going to remember this. We started a 3-game set with the Mets that the Mets were hoping we needed to lose that game, and that would have given them a chance to come in here and sweep us. And the great thing was, up to my left, sitting in a press box, were the Mets watching the game. watching all this unfold. And it was still Keith Hernandez. I'll never forget Keith Hernandez sitting in the front row with his hand on his face, just watching this stadium go completely crazy.
Smoking a cigarette.
Yeah, probably.
By the way.
Or doing something
else. Hey, Danny Cox, what a great name.
Oh.
Remember when Whitey let him go late in the season down to, like, Georgia or somewhere because his brother-in-law was doing something?
Put and his hands on his sister.
I didn't want to say that because I didn't know what I'm allowed to say because I'm not sure factually what happened. But something like that happened.
Well,
he let him go down there to kick his ass. Then he comes back and pitches a whale of a game. I mean, that's Whitey for you.
Well, I'm going to tell you factually.
I think you got knowledge of this.
I do. I played golf in a golf tournament with Danny. And I'm drinking a beer with him. And I've gotten to know him a little bit through people that are friends with him. And I said to him, I said, I'm sure you get asked this question all the time. And he looked at me without missing a beat and goes, yep. And I go, you don't even know what I'm asking? He goes, yes, I do. I know exactly what you're going to ask me. And, yes, it did happen. And that's why Whitey was awesome. I went down, had my business, come home. He goes, hey, ain't nobody going to put their hands on my sister.
Would that make you a player's manager?
I believe it would be the epitome of a player's manager.
I mean, it may be hard for Danny Cox to live down because he's probably been asked that a million times.
Oh, he said it's his most asked thing.
But what in Cardinal lore, what a great story.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
I mean, here's a guy that flies down to Georgia, wherever it's at, and kicks somebody's ass, gets back on a plane, drives,
And here's another thing. If you don't know him, take a good look at him. He looks like the guy that would do that.
Yes.
Does he not? He's...
He's a monster.
And he's a man's man. I mean, he's a fish. You know, he's fishing, having a beer, golfing. He's that guy.
Just a Fu Manchu mustache.
Oh, just.
How cool was that? I bet he still wears it, don't he?
Oh, yeah, one of my favorite players, for sure. I mean, you know what? We love that. I mean, I think baseball fans in general love that whole tough guy thing. But, you know, we've thrived on that over the years here in St. Louis. We've had that guy, right? I mean, as far, obviously it probably started way before, but for me, it always. You think of Bob Gibson because he's got that unbelievable reputation. And then, for me, it was Danny Cox. Obviously you think about him and how he approached it. Todd Worrell, who I've seen at some golf tournaments, because when I worked at AB, he would be at some. This guy looks like he could play football today. I mean, he looks like a linebacker.
Yeah, he was more the silent type. Like, he didn't say much about, but yeah, I think you'd be scared of him.
I mean, I'm telling you, I was scared of him just sitting in the room with him.
How would Tony Twist look playing left field for the Cardinals?
Oh, let me tell you something. Speaking of about tough guys, like Tim Tebow would.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
This Tim Tebow looks like he could play in the NFL.
Did you see him taking cuts the other night?
I did see that the other night.
What do you think?
I mean, you know what? I don't live in this world to knock people for no reason, so here's what I say. Good luck. Go get him. Now, can he do it? I'd say the odds are against him. You've got to be an idiot to say the odds are against him, but what good does it do to knock him? What good does it do?
Would he look good in a Cardinal uniform?
Well, I tell you what, he'd look good in a single-A baseball uniform. Go get him. Go see if he can do it.
I think Twitter feed has him some teams interested.
Said there's five or six. And again, I'm not here to argue whether or not it's publicity or whatever. Again, are the odds against him? Of course they are. That's a stupid argument to say they're not. But who cares? Why does everybody got to say, he can't do it, he can't do it? Listen, this guy, number one, has spent his whole life people telling him what he can't do.
Hey, I'll say this. He better be a good hitter because they're not going to sign him for his arm.
Yeah, that
we done seen that thing.
Well, wait a minute. He could play in our outfield over the last 10 years. We've had John Jay out there. Come on, they don't get much worse than that.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been John Jay.
I mean, he couldn't get the ball to the pitcher's mound. He couldn't. And then listen, I'm not – hey, the guy had a couple nice – runs with the Cardinals like in some of those years. I mean, hey, he did a great job that year they won the World Series. I got no issue with him. My point is he couldn't throw the ball to the pitcher's mound, so let's not say that it's all that.
Okay? Yeah, John Jay don't have much in Cardinal history. I think when the next generation of cats are talking like we are about sports,
John Jay
they won't remember him and say, yeah, remember that guy?
No, he won't either. And they may not remember Tebow, but my point on Tebow is, again, he spent the last 5-6 years of his life here by telling him what he can't do. And, he's done okay for himself. I mean, the guy played in the NFL, and everybody said he couldn't. The guy won a playoff game. They said
right,
he couldn't.
But unless they put him in a Cardinal uniform, let's move on. To heck with Tebow.
Hey, but they might. You don't
Sorry
know
I brought
that.
It up.
They might not. You don't know. But no,
well, he'd look all right in a Cardinal uniform,
But the whole tough guy thing, like Danny Cox and then obviously the Carpenter, and I think, and I'm going to be honest with you, I love the intensity that Wainwright has, but he doesn't have that thing like I'm going to come over there and knock you on your ass. A little bit, but maybe we're missing that. Maybe we are missing that. I think that was something to be said. Like, I remember when Carpenter – remember when we got Chris Carpenter? When we got him, he was hurt, and everybody's like, well, what did we get here? And it was Matheny.
Hey,
Matheny went to him and said, hey, this guy has got it if we can live through this and get him healthy. And that was part of it.
When they were both pitching in St. Louis, my wife couldn't separate who was who. And she would literally be asking me a question, and she'd ask me, or she'd say something like, is he the mean one or the funny one? Talking about Wainwright and Carpenter.
Yeah.
Carpenter, then there's another one. He had a bulldog mentality. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Well, sure. I mean, he had...
Strictly business.
He had it, for sure. And, you know, and it's neat we're talking about Chris Carpenter because he was just voted into the Hall of Fame, the St. Louis Cardinal Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Which, is, you know, I mean, there's obviously the Baseball Hall of Fame. I think to quote-unquote Cardinal Nation... The Cardinal Hall of Fame is just as important to us because, I mean, they're our guys, right? That's how we feel. These are our guys, right? And obviously it's a big honor to go in the – but these are our guys. And I got to tell you, you know, the guy had – and admittedly, I tell you, you know, he didn't have the longevity and the numbers because of his history or because of his health and his in the history. But, man, when this guy was on the mound, he was as good as anybody. And we loved him because he did have that. That, you know, you're not going to walk in here and do this to me. You always felt like when he went on the mound that, you know, he was just as well might hit somebody and to ask him to charge the mound as he would win a baseball game for you. And we loved him for that. I think St. Louis generally loves that in their players.
Hey, he got robbed from a Cy Young. We were talking about it in the earlier show. It's the clown from the Giants with the long hair now. What was his name?
Bumgardner?
Lincecum.
No, Lincecum.
Oh, Lincecum.
Yeah, Tim Lincecum. He got Carpenter got robbed that year.
Yeah, that's true.
Well,
was that a winning situation that they was that what that was or how what or was it because it was the young and they had the whole freak thing going?
I don't know what situation it was, but if you look at the numbers, to me, Carpenter was better
for sure.
And they give it to Lincecum, and then he won another one, I believe.
Well, that goes back to the whole you know, East Coast, Left Coast, Right Coast bias. I mean, we looked at it. You can go back to your full circle it back to your '87 with Ozzie Smith and Andre Dawson. Ozzie Smith, winning team, wins the pennant. Has great stats, his best year, arguably, second MVP voting behind the Hawk, Andre Dawson.
We brought that up on the other show, and I said it was 89. Was it 87?
87
is 87. Right. That's correct.
And then fast forward to the whole McGuire and Sammy Sosa days, you know, was it 98? You know, they give it to Sosa because, oh, he's on a winning team. You got to be on a winning team to be the MVP, right?
Well, do you or don't you? I mean, you know, really.
Because Dawson in 87 was on a last-place team. I do got that right.
Just like McGuire was when he went up against Sosa for it, and they finished 1-2.
Your numbers got to be good to be on a last-place team. I think the Hawk did it 49 home runs that year. His numbers were good. But
you know, and I don't mind the whole losing thing like that, but if you're stay consistent, if you got to be on a winning team to get the MVP vote, then that's what it is. If you can be, you know, what? Hey, here's the
directions.
I'm
a sports writer. And they send me my ballot. Are there directions?
Well,
does it say on there, you can't vote for pitchers, definitely don't vote for relievers, and God darn it, you got to be in the playoff hunt. Do I get directions? Is anybody telling me who I can and can't vote for?
Well, there's the most valuable player compared to, and by definition, most outstanding player, right? Most outstanding player, okay, let's give it to whoever.
I've never seen an award for most outstanding.
No. But that's why they wanted to change it. That's a whole argument. Most valuable, if in 87... the Cubs don't have Andre Dawson. What place will they finish?
Last.
What place did they finish?
You love to say that, don't you?
I absolutely do.
If the Cardinals didn't have Ozzy, would they have won the pennant?
No.
Exactly. So that's the whole point with the value of it. What is your value?
Hey, and I think there is, like the Heisman Trophy, I'm really stretching here, but I think there is some language to the MVP that says you have to have certain character. I think there is a little bit in there. When they send that out, I think there's something on there that says, now they're not telling you who vote for or not vote for, but I think there's something in there that says you got to have certain character, certain this, certain that.
I think in the Heisman, you're definitely right.
Yeah, I know that there is in the Heisman. I think I may be lying about the other one.
Yeah, I think, you're lying about it. Or
I probably
you're just
am.
Full of crap.
Right. I prefer to be called a liar.
Come on now. I would say, here's another thing too. The MVP voting always is before postseason.
Correct.
You know, and now with this wild card, you've got all these teams basically, and I'm not going to say teams in the past would, you know, you get to the last month and we're completely out of this, things change. That's real. You can't change that, right? I mean, teams are starting to look at other players and guys that are playing through injuries, and if they're in a push, aren't playing. So obviously the landscape changes. But, you know, should we wait until the thing's over, or is that why we have that and then we have the playoff MVP?
That's why we have the ESPYs.
What about the exposure a player gets to, like you said, the Left Coast, Right Coast, all that stuff. Because, you know, these guys in New York, they are. Like, when the Cardinals have made runs like in 2011, ESPN barely had them on. And it would kill me. But then I also say everybody that's ever been robbed of an MVP or Cy Young, in my mind, was a Cardinal. So that right. sounds a little biased also.
I would say that up until, you know, we got the new stadium-ish, you know, about 10 years ago, I think Cardinal Nation started getting their due in the media. I've seen a lot of Sunday night baseball, Wednesday night baseball games. I think we've gotten our fair shake of coverage. But prior to that 05-06 time, you know, and not that it was warranted. I mean, we went in, what, series in 04, championship game in 05, series in 06 and win it. So up until then, maybe it wasn't really warranted. But, you know, I agree with you. I don't think we got a whole lot of love prior to that. But the last 10 years, I've been fairly happy with the coverage.
With our listeners, I'd be interested in how they felt about what kind of coverage the Cardinals get out of the national coverage. I'll bet they think like I do. I'll bet they think we get cheated.
Well, here, I found the rules, the supposed rules, okay? The rules of voting remain the same as they were written on the first ballot in 1931. So right there, does that make sense that we haven't changed anything since 1931?
That's baseball okay. for you. Typical.
Okay. All right. Number one, actual value of a player to his team, that is strength of offense and defense. Number two, number of games played. Number three, general character, disposition, loyalty, and effort. Number four, former winners are eligible. Interesting. Number five, members of the committee may vote for more than one member of a team. Okay. The MVP committee members are also urged to give serious consideration to all your selections from 1 to 10.
See, I wasn't lying, and they did say something about character.
Yeah?
Gosh. You're
How the hell is Barry Bonds win an MVP then?
How many did he win? Seven?
What do you win? Oh, but I mean,
I thought he won five.
Five?
Maybe
routinely.
Six.
Routinely villainized by people.
I was saying, Steve, on the other show, if Bonds isn't around, which I guess everybody can say this, but I thought Pujols got screwed a couple times. If Bonds isn't around, Pujols wins six in a row.
Correct. 100% correct. So, but, I mean, I've also heard a lot of great stories about Bonds behind the scenes
sure.
in the community. And he had a very much of a disdain for the national media, or, you know, and that's – and he grew up in baseball. I mean, this kid's been around it forever. I say kid, he's older than me. But he was around it forever, and he just didn't like – the reporters.
Okay, well then let's flip it over and say, was he that good that they didn't like him and they still voted for him? Because typically what you would say is, well, they didn't vote for him because they didn't like him. Was he that good that they were like, you know, I can't stand the guy, but I got to vote for him?
He was that good.
He was
that
good.
Yeah, I think so. If you look at them numbers, I think he was that good. But, you know, I thought later in his career, and I'm talking about once he did or didn't do things to get bigger and stronger, he walked so many times that I felt like he'd have been a better asset to his club if he would have swung at pitches. He got every call, so any borderline call was never a called strike against Bonds. And I'm not saying that like Bonds got away with everything. I'm saying that there'd be a guy on second, he'd walk. Well, heck, they wanted to walk him. They didn't really want to face Bonds. So that club would have been much better off. The Giants, really, because he wouldn't like it in Pittsburgh. Had he swung up more pitches?
They're making that case right now for Joey Votto. I mean, management has wanted him to swing at more of these pitches. I mean, this guy takes pitch upon pitch upon pitch at the corner. There's been a time. Now, I think Matt Carpenter's surge with his home runs has been because he hasn't been as picky. But Matt Carpenter traditionally is a picky guy. He takes a lot of pitches on the corner when they want him. But it seems like as the power has come for Carpenter, he's driving more of those balls and not taking them. I mean, you know, he routinely likes to take a first pitch strike. Well, every now and again, you know, he kind of, like, I guess if you want to say this, kind of outthinks his opponent and jumps on. He did it to Kershaw. Remember
See,
that?
But yeah. The problem with that is, and it didn't affect Bonds, I don't think, but with, like, Carpenter, I think it takes away from your overall aggressiveness. Because, honestly, I thought Carpenter was a better hitter 3 years ago. And he still took a lot of pitches, but, you know.
When he was hitting less home runs, you thought he was a better hitter?
Yeah, I thought he was a better hitter. Yeah, really? I mean, the 1 year he had 50-something doubles.
Yeah.
I mean, what's more important? I guess you could say the home run, but he's getting on base to be driven in.
Sure.
He's still hitting with, you know.
For sure. Yeah, so. I mean, he's obviously a fantastic player. So, hey, I want to get back to this MVP thing, though, because I want to talk about two things that always seem to come up. Number one, and this is just me, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, nowhere in here does it, A, say you have to play for a winning team. And nowhere on here, B, does it say you can't be a pitcher. So where did those unwritten rules come from?
There are unwritten rules of baseball. And that's my whole point, is that it wasn't in 87 about you had to be on a winning team. It only turned out in 98 that you had to be on a winning team.
Well, again, that's
your Chicago bias, you know?
I don't know. It's right here. It doesn't say anything about it. So, and again, I don't even think – I honest to God was looking for interpretation to be on a winning team, and I don't get that. It doesn't say anything about that. It says value to your team.
No, but I think in fairness, whether they're written or unwritten rules, winning's a pretty important part of this.
Kumbaya.
I mean, it's much easier to win an MVP when you're on a winning team than it is playing with the 87 Cubs.
Well, I'm with you. But, again, it's not how it's written.
But his numbers, like I said, in 87, them numbers were – that was pre-everybody hitting the bombs. We talked about this somewhere earlier, that he hit 49 home runs that year, right?
I believe you are correct.
And the separation there between what he hit and the rest of the league was hitting was pretty big. Now, you know, I mean, we went through that stretch where everybody hit 49 right. home runs, even a
and that's play. And that's where you get into the whole – the vernacular. I'm going to throw you off
there
that
we
one.
Go again. He said that word again. Did you learn what that meant yet?
No.
No, me neither. I don't know. But I'm gonna assume it has something to do with
the verbiage between.
Yeah. Look, we'll qualify it now to say Steve-O's smarter than I am.
Hey,
that's what we're going.
He just threw out verbiage, too.
That was the one from last week, yeah. too. So between most outstanding player and most valuable player. And if you do, I'm telling you, we've been around a lot of kids' youth sports, and now it seems like most of those trophies are most outstanding player. As opposed to MVPs, most valuable.
Yeah, but everybody gets a trophy now, don't they?
It sure seems like
I it. I wish that had been like, you know, I hear a lot of people complain about that, but I wish it was like that when I played Little League Baseball.
Yeah, a lot of trophies.
Hell, I think I got one trophy at home, and I don't think I played on that team. It would have been nice to, you know, show my kids the 15, 18 trophies I had. I didn't even have to tell them I wasn't no good.
Well, you know, as far as being in the races and where you sit for all this type of stuff, I mean, obviously the wild card, I think, brings a lot more guys into the fold. Now, as we sit here today, I think we're sitting in second place, wild card. Okay, we got a big series this weekend. We play the Reds. Now the Pirates, Milwaukee comes to Pittsburgh. So we got to handle our business this weekend. What I do like though is that we got San Francisco going into Chicago. So that, you know, and obviously we're looking at, it'd be nice if one of those teams in the West would fall. And of course, the New York Mets, who the team that worries me the most, they have Washington coming to town. So I'd sure like to see Washington come in and handle their business in New York. So I think from a Cardinals perspective for this weekend, although, you know, I'm not saying the Cubs are a pushover because they have played better baseball for sure. But we gotta win 2 or 3 this weekend, and it'd be sure nice if other teams handled their business against our competitors.
Well, now we're getting into that final month, right? We're in the September push, and I think you start looking at things, and you start looking at everybody's schedule.
Sure.
Okay, this isn't April anymore. This isn't June and July. We're starting to look at who's going where, and what scares me is when you get a 15.5 game lead in the Central or a 12-game lead in the East, and you're expecting Washington to handle their business against the Mets, and guess what? They might be sitting Harper. Ramos.
Well, they better not sit Harper.
You know,
he needs to get going.
Well, he needs to go. But what I'm saying is, what if they're not throwing out their best game because they're preparing? And this is where you start getting into it, and you want everybody to be in a dogfight because you might not get everybody's best game.
Okay, well, that brings you back to the games in April are just as important because if you'd have handled your – again, don't let your future rely on somebody else, and that's basically what we've
done.
See,
that's what I was going to say. That's the problem is – now we're in a position because we're not in years past winning division like the Cubs are this year in a runaway style. We're needing other people's help. Well, you're in a tough spot when you're asking that. But so do the Pirates and so do the Miami and so do these other teams that we're competing against. They need other people's help too. You're in a tough spot when you're asking that. Who knows who's going to get the help, who's not going to get the help.
Well, and again, that's why I go back to my initial statement, and that is if we take the Tony La Russa mentality and we win 2 or 3, I think we're okay. I mean, we get to 90 wins, I like my chance. Listen, if we get to 90 wins and don't make it, I'll tip my cap, I guess.
Right.
The other thing, Jimmy, is the April thing. You know, that's true. It's one of those things left unsaid, whatever. No one thinks that way.
No, they don't.
It is true that the games in April are as important as the games in September or October or whatever, but no one thinks that way. They seem a lot more important now to me.
Well, it sure would be nice to have if Wainwright can throw like he has, I personally like what I've seen. I mean, I know Luke Weaver lost the other night. He threw one bad pitch. But, well, he threw – everybody says he threw one bad pitch in Neuenheis. No, the again, it's almost like with a kid. Well, you know, Coach, he threw me curveballs. Well, you didn't strike out on the curveball. He did throw you some hittable fastballs. You didn't hit those. Same thing here. You walked the pitcher with two outs. Okay, that got you into trouble. That's what got you into trouble, not the whole. So anyway, but I like what I've seen from Weaver. I think he's been great. For the most part, I would say, hard to argue. I mean, he pitched a great game except for that one sequence. So I like what I've seen from him. People are talking, can they win with these rookies? Well, why not? It's been proven that you can. Okay, so I mean, I think that's –
they're going to have to.
Well, and that's the other thing. I don't think we have a choice. That,
right.
That's, I mean, that's my answer to the question. We don't have a choice.
Hey, what did you think of Matheny bringing Owen in a tie game in the ninth the other night?
I mean – it worked out.
You know, they even talked about it on TV. A lot of managers don't want to do that.
Yeah.
It did work out because they won.
You know that, but see, that's always my argument. Okay, if it works, then he's a genius. If it doesn't work, he's an idiot. It's the same thing. The players got to play. You put guys in a position to do these things. I mean, when he took Reyes out and everybody was complaining a few games ago, if Zach Duke comes in and does what he's supposed to do, this is a non-conversation. All you can do as a manager is take the pieces that you have now. If the manager doesn't trust some of these guys to bring them into situations, like it's gotten painfully obvious that his last resort right now is Jonathan Broxton. He's only brought him in when he's had to. Like the other night, people were like, I can't believe he's bringing him in. I'm like, who do you want him to bring in? He had no choice right now.
He's in a tough spot. We talked about it again earlier with Rosenthal, Broxton.
Yep.
I mean, what are you going to do? At some point, you got to do something.
Yeah. You can't just sit there. Now.
And I think they've gotten lucky with how well O has pitched. Think of him not throwing as well as he's pitched, where would they be?
Well, and again, the double switches, I know it irritates people when he takes out these guys. You know, that might be like something he's got, like playing 21, where it says, oh, I'm up by one. It says I'm supposed to double switch. I'm going to double switch. Sooner or later, though, you might have to hit on 17.
See, I don't think that he does that. Just like we said, he brought in O the other night in the ninth inning of a tight game.
But that's
if he's
book.
Playing that by the book. You think that's the
that's
book?
That's the book on the road. I believe on a tie game in the ninth, you bring in your closer. At home, you don't.
No, I think it's the other way
is
around.
Is it the other way around?
I think so.
See,
because you get the last at bat. You're counting on your guys doing something. If you bring in your closer on the road, okay, all you've done is add yourself another inning, but you got to get there anyway.
Well, I started reading
one of those other ones.
You know what? And you know what? Listeners, really, call me out. If I'm completely wrong, maybe it is the other. Maybe you're out there going, hey, dummy, it's the other way around. I don't know, but I'm almost sure that's it.
You're probably right, so don't let them call me dummy. I'm sensitive.
Well, dummy.
There's a lot of managers, book or not, that don't want to bring their reliever in. Unless they have a lead.
Well.
I mean, you can't tell me about being home on the road or whatever. In a tight game, they don't bring their reliever in. You know, they're closer reliever.
Well, I know this. I wish he wouldn't have done it because I'm playing against a guy in fantasy playoffs this week that had O, and he got a freaking win out of that. So I wish he wouldn't have done it.
And you know that book? I started to read that book, by the way.
What
the
book?
The book of baseball. But it had a lot of words like verbiage and vernacular in it. I had to lay it down. I said, man, I don't even understand
that
stuff.
Unwritten book? How do you read an unwritten book of rules?
I don't know.
A book of unwritten rules. I don't know how you read something like that.
Is there one of those out there? There's got to be one of those out
there.
I'm
sure there is. If there is, I'm surprised Fish hasn't read it.
Hey, there's a guy that wrote a book, a college coach that wrote a book about game management time-wise. How do you manage time wise in the NFL and da 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 in college? If they've written a book on that, they've written a book on everything.
Come on, I'm sure.
They wrote a script on How to Kill a Mockingbird, didn't they?
Yeah. Hey, neat thing. I didn't
read that either.
Hey, neat thing. I brought up Chris Carpenter,
mm-hmm.
And obviously it was and I like what they've done, the Cardinal franchise with the Hall of Famers, and they let the fans vote, and I think it's great. I think it's an opportunity to recognize some guys that I think we as Cardinal fans have realized, even though they may have been our favorite players, a la Jim Edmonds, Willie McGee, Ted Simmons, they may not make it into the actual Hall of Fame, but guess what? Their Hall of Famers does. So I like what they've done. You guys like that? You think that's a good thing?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Carpenter. One is that we really can't have a Cardinals show without mentioning the fact that just recently Chris Carpenter has been elected to the St. Louis Cardinal Hall of Fame. But we were talking earlier about the numbers in the Hall of Famers. Where does that work in, like a guy like Akendo?
Well, I mean,
he don't have any numbers really that would put you in any kind of Hall of Fame. But I mean, he's such an iconic Cardinal to me.
Is he not in yet?
He may be. I may be.
Is he not in the card?
I'm not sure. If he isn't, he will be.
Yeah, because I mean, let me tell you something. And again, I you know, the rumors are that this guy's gone forever. and I, which would seem crazy to me. But God, I hope they're just that rumors. But because if he's ever proved his worth to the Cardinals, it's this year as a manager, of course, or a coach, whatever word you want to use. But I do think that the whole thing does allow the Cardinals to let us have a say in the in how we will look at the history of the Cardinals, and I think that's what they've done. I think a genius marketing plan by the Cardinals, of course, because it, you know, as fans we get off on this, right? It's, you know, it's our team, it's our, these are our guys, so it is a great thing. So I bring up Carpenter because obviously we lived through great years with him, and it, there was a lot of what ifs with him. If he just could have stayed healthy, if he just, God only knows what could have happened, right? He's one of my personal all time favorites. I mean, if you ask me, he basically gave his right arm to the Cardinals in 2011. I mean, that whole bulldog thing of short rest, give me the ball, I won't lose. You know, for starters, he goes out and outduels Holiday in Philadelphia in a game that you think you got no chance of winning. He brings it, he brings the World Series back to, you know, hey, we're going to the World Series because this guy went out and outdueled one of the greatest
that
pitchers.
That was a dandy, by the
that
way.
It was a dandy. It was a, for sure. That was a that was I'm not losing. That, I mean, that's the stuff of lore, right? And then he goes out and he pitches well in the World Series. And on short rest, he's, you know, he basically walks in and says, you know, you're not giving this ball to anybody but me. You know, and like he said, he was honest enough to say when they interviewed him, I had a feeling I was getting the ball anyway, but yeah, I kind of went in there and lobbied and said, I can do this.
Much different than your youth baseball program, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
We're, on what guys will do and how many innings they can throw and how short a rest. Well, but you know, Carpenter would not want it any other way.
For sure. That's because, listen, number one, this is the pinnacle. There is no maybe about it. There is no, this might be the best ever that you get to. This may be your level. What is your potential? This guy was no dummy. He knew he was at the end of the road. This in his mind, I guarantee you, he's thinking, you know what? This might be the last meaningful game I ever pitch, but golly, how could you want it any other way?
Right.
Which brings you to the conversation about the Washington Nationals a couple years ago shutting down Strasburg.
Sure.
If they don't make it in the next couple of years and he's on the tail end of his career and he never gets to a World Series, I mean, is that a pivotal moment where you look back and you go, oh, man, that might have been a bad call?
Well, there's teams dealing with it right now. Toronto Blue Jays are dealing with Aaron Sanchez. They just sent him down to have him skip a start. You know, this guy comes back and goes into Baltimore and wins. I mean, this guy's putting up a phenomenal season for a young guy. Now, I understand we're trying to be careful with these guys, but, you know, will they ever get to this pinnacle point again? I don't know. But Carpenter is our guy, right? I mean, we love him. We just I thought it was great because they asked him about being compared to Bob Gibson. And he said, listen, you can't compare me to Bob Gibson. Bob Gibson changed the game. And he was very respectful. But I think that that was the common thread that we heard. That brings me to our This Week in Cardinal History. And, you know, we've often wondered, you know, Bob Gibson always had that you know, that lore of tough and look you in the eye and you didn't even want to be in the same room with him because he might look right through you and kill you. Well, I think I know why Bob Gibson it looks mad all the time to this day. This guy had an unbelievable career, but in this date in Cardinal history, future Hall of Famer Bob Gibson gives up a grand slam to Chicago's Pete LeCocq, the son of Hollywood Squares host Peter Marshall. The Cardinal right-hander faces one more batter in the inning, retiring Don Kessinger on a groundout, and never returns to a big league mound. Now, we talked a little bit about the scenario around this. He was brought in the game as a reliever. It's 1975. He's having all kinds of knee issues. He said after this, he said, you know what, if I can't get that guy out, it's time to hang it up. So, you know, to be compared to a guy like that, it's kind of similar to the way Carpenter's thing ends. I mean, I've been so dominant and so great for so long, I just can't do it no more.
Hey, it's always tough to see any of these guys at the end of their career and what we remember. I remember Don Kissinger, and if you can't get him out, which it sounds like he did, if you can't get him out, it is time to retire.
Well, I think he was talking
Believe
more about
me,
Pete LeCocq.
Right.
If you can't get him out of it.
Well, yeah. He was a better hitter than Kissinger, but still not a good one.
Yeah. And again, Bob Gibson, unfortunately, is in the Hall of Fame and was recognized for his dominance over a period of time versus the quote-unquote numbers that we look at today, 300 wins, 3,000 strikeouts, or, you know, 700 saves, whatever those numbers are going to be. But at least a guy like Gibson gets in because of the way he dominated the league for such a stretch. Now, yeah. I where I'm going with this is, was Chris Carpenter every bit as good when he did perform?
No.
No.
No, he wasn't as good as Bob Gibson. There's no way. I mean, Bob Gibson was truly dominant for quite a while, for a good 10 years. I mean, truly dominant. You know, again, things have changed. Look at the amount of innings them guys pitched. It wasn't none for them guys to throw 300 innings. Him, Drysdale, Koufax, all them guys back then. Mike Cuellar.
I hate to put you on the spot. Maybe you don't know, and if you don't, that's fine. But didn't he have a season where he threw like however many complete games? I mean, it was something obscene, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know the numbers, but
it was obscene.
Yeah, it was,
it
like
was obscene.
24 or something. Crazy.
I mean, you're lucky to see a guy throw. I mean, I should have wrote this down. Somebody the other night who's been a great pitcher was going for his first complete game win. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm like thinking this guy, it might have been like, I don't remember who it was, but I was like, God, and to think that this guy did it 20-something times in one season.
But that's like we were talking in the previous show where it just changed so much. It's hard to compare that because you're right in thinking, because I think I was watching that game where they were talking about his first complete game, and I thought the same thing you did. Like, my God, not somewhere did he, you know, but it's changed that much. These guys used to throw a lot. They used to throw a lot of innings. They used to complete games. You know, Bob Gibson, when he had his 1.12 ERA in 68, was 21-9 or 22-9 or 20-9. I think it might have been 22-9. He lost 9 games and had a 1.12 ERA.
How do you lose 9 games with an ERA that low?
Well, draw the rest of it up. He lost games 1-0, 2-1. I mean, literally, if a guy like Maxwell made an error that cost you the game, that was it. Now you can play around that because you're scoring a lot of runs.
Hey, I think we might have scratched on something here. What? Tell me a little bit about your feelings about Dale over there. You see him kicking off balls? You're angry about it?
Oh, no. Okay. He was pretty good defensively. He couldn't hit. But, no, I'm all right with that.
Who are we talking about?
Well, we were talking about Dal Maxwell, I think is what
you
he was referring to.
You've got the greatest Dal Maxwell story ever.
I think I already forgot.
Oh, it's the greatest. Don't you remember leaning over the dugout and saying, Dal, I'm Fish.
Oh,
I'm
I do remember
City.
That. We were at a game. Was you at the game with me?
No, but you told the story about 100
times. And he's
times.
In the dugout, and I leaned over there and said, hey, Dal Maxwell. You know, I wasn't a kid, but I wasn't, you know, I was in between that thing. I was probably 18, 19 years old, that adult kid thing. So I keep carrying on like, hey, Dal Maxwell, and he wouldn't even give me his attention. He wouldn't even look at me. So finally I said, hey, Dal Maxwell, I'm from Granite City.
Because Dal Maxwell was from Granite City.
Yes, he was. Okay. I'm sorry, I should have put that in there. He's from Granite City. Not very few Granite Cityans have played in the big leagues, so he did. And I said, hey, Dal Maxwell, I'm from Granite City. And he turned around and looked at me. I finally got his attention, and he said, I don't F where you're from.
He had had
and
enough
I
of
thought,
you.
Are you kidding me? We got our baseball complex back home is called the Dal Maxwell Fields. And the best you can give me, you can't give me, hey, that's cool, kid. You give me, I don't care where to you're from.
Do we have a beep?
No. So now you got a good feeling for why, yeah. You know, he may not be on his all-time great.
Like I
team.
Said, there was something about his body language. I'll keep it simple. When he said it, then I go, there's a story in here.
You're the guy with the big words. So what is that really, like my latent personality or something? Something I don't really recognize, but it's in me?
Hey, listen here, Freud. Slow it down. Pump the brakes here.
Hey, pump the brakes.
I hear you, but because you're probably right. I mean, look, if you're Bob Gibson, you're not mad about Dal Maxwell? My God, score a few runs here, kid.
Hey, agreed. I got a great stat for you. How about this? All right. We talked about that 68 season and how great it was and how it kind of changed baseball, of course. All right, this is phenomenal stuff. All right, opposing batters hit 184, and an on-base percentage of only 233. How about this for a slugging percentage against 236? Can you imagine playing today and a slugging percentage of only 236? All right, lost 9 games against 22 wins with a 1.12 ERA, okay? Unbelievable. All right, this guy won all 12 starts in June and July, pitching a complete game every time. 8 of them were shutouts. Can you imagine going through a stretch of watching a pitcher on your team feeling like every time he goes out, well, he's going to throw a complete game and shut him out? And that's basically what he did.
Wasn't that like Arrieta last year?
Oh, it felt like it. I know.
Well, that was the year. That's why they did the lowering the mound. Yeah. Because if you look at all them numbers, Denny McClain won 31 games in Detroit that year. Don Drysdale, that was the year I believe that he had like 56 in a third scoreless innings. Kovac, all them guys had all these phenomenal pitching records, so they lowered the mound and created them. And I can see that. I love a well-pitched game. I really do. And I love Bob Gibson. Wouldn't it get a little boring watching that? I mean,
I'm going to give you
eight shutouts.
I'm going to give you
why
the impressive
soccer's
thing.
Never taken off in the United States.
You ready for the impressive point on this whole thing? I think this sums it up. Gibson finished the season with 28 complete games out of 34 games started. Okay, so he threw a complete game, 28 of the 34, right? All right. Of the games he didn't complete, he was pinch hit for, meaning Gibson was not removed from the mound for another pitcher for the entire season. For the entire season, they never went out and got him.
Well, you know, that brings up the story that I got with Tim McCarver. When he put down a sign and Gibson shook it off, he put down the same sign, and so McCarver heads to the mound. Now, this is a true story. He gets halfway to the mound, and Gibson coming out after him. He ain't waiting for him to get to the mound. And when they meet in the middle of the mound on home plate, Gibson says, listen, the only thing you know about pitching is you can't hit it. Get back there.
And these guys are best friends.
Yeah, they are good friends. But that's coming from a guy with 20. I'd say he knows a little bit about pitching. Get your ass behind the plate because you ain't telling me nothing.
Yep. Well, you do your job, I'll do mine.
Well, I think as Cardinal fans, we take some of these iconic guys and then we expect everybody to kind of live up to that if they can, or at least try to. And I think for Cardinal fan now, this whole, you know, and again, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, the whole we're the best fans or Cardinal Nation, whatever. I know that gets kind of geeky, but I think we feel like we have this certain standard. I think we hold every pitcher that comes from here on out to Bob Gibson's standard. I don't think we expect them to meet those standards, but that's what we like. I think that's why Carpenter was so loved by the fans, is that he was the closest thing the modern day got to that at this point. I think that's why we like Danny Cox in the 80s, and that's why the whole lore of the story screams. I mean, if you're a hockey fan, who routinely are the most loved guys in St. Louis? The
fighters.
I mean, we love them because they do dirty work and they work hard. We claim to be this town of hard work and all this kind of. We love that sort of stuff. Now, obviously, we love Brett Hall, but I think they love Brett Hall as much for the fact that he didn't give a shit and would tell you what he thought as much as he pumped in all them goals.
Well, and he scored 86 goals. Well, yeah, it's pretty easy to fall in love with a guy scoring 86 goals.
But he scored 86 and didn't sit there and say, give you the cliche answers either. He scored 86 goals and would tell you how what was going on. I think Chris Carpenter a few times told her, you know, he would let his emotions show on the field, and I think we love that as a community.
So who would win a fight off the ice between Tony Twist and Chris Carpenter?
Twist.
Hey, that year Twist had, brother. He was breaking guys' legs, jaws. He broke Rob Ray's jaw. He was breaking guys' legs. He wasn't just winning fights. He was
a bad man.
People.
He was a bad man. But, hey, you know, Carpenter, my favorite Carpenter moment was they were playing when Dusty Baker was the coach of the Cubs. They had a foul ball in St. Louis, and I was at the game. I was at the game with Booker and some of the guys, and we had won these tickets in a golf tournament. So they were really good seats. They were behind, not actually behind, right next to almost the Cubs dugout. And, I mean, we had a great time. I think it was me, him, Les, and Bartling, if you can imagine that crew. Okay? We go down there, and, I mean, we're right there, and there's a foul ball hit, and Carpenter comes running over, and the catcher comes running over at the time. I don't know if it was Yachty or Matheny or whoever it was. Come running over, and they all converge at the thing, right? And there had been some back and forth with some hit batters and some stuff like this. Well, it's pretty evident somebody said something to Carpenter because he turned around and walked away, and then he turned back around, and he had that glove on, and he's pointing that glove down in the dugout. And Dusty Baker points him, and he goes, yeah, I'm talking to you. And I mean to tell you, it was phenomenal. Because you just don't see that, right? Most guys just turn around and go, he wasn't putting up with it. And again, it's right there with the Yachty thing when he kicked Phillips's bat. We love that. You're not going to come in here and talk that way to us in our house. We love that.
It's not part of the show, but if you were to ask me what player in baseball history that I hate the most, it would be Dusty Baker. If I seen him right now, I'd kick him in the nuts.
He would scissor kick him in the spleen.
What do you mean it's not part of the show? Well, of course it's part of the show.
Well, I know, but it's...
Why? What do you do to you?
Here I go with my inner feelings again.
Freud. Where's Freud at when we need
Freud.
Him? Sigmund. You need to lay down on the couch.
Who the hell is this Freud guy? Why do you keep calling
you
me...
You know him, Sigmund.
Fred
you know
Freud.
Him. Sigmund. You know Sigmund.
Ah, whatever.
Come on. Why do you hate Dusty so much? I'm not saying
I love
him. Oh,
it's been a lifetime. Well, one... He managed the Cubs at one time.
So you don't like him.
He's just always had that, you know, that whole Cardinal when he was with the Giants, that whole Cardinal rivalry thing with the Giants and with the Cubs. I just do not like Dusty Baker.
Man.
I don't know why.
You know what? I can't decide.
I wake up some mornings don't like me.
Hey, is this real or is he trying to be the fan favorite on the show? I mean, he is saying all the right stuff. Well, you can't like the Cubs. You can't even admit you like the Cubs.
What do you guys like, Dusty Baker?
Hey, wait until he busts into his Babe Ruth voice. Oh. You know, he's going to try to throw all this stuff out here to win over the audience.
He's multi-talented.
Hey, I seen a show the other night. I stayed up really late after the kids were in bed and watched. I think it's called Babe or something. And it's just a thing about Babe Ruth. And they had all these clips that you wouldn't really think that they still had. Like, they got, like...
From his orphanage days.
Yeah, from his pictures and motion pictures, and it was really good.
Well, I tell you what, I'm looking forward to this weekend series. I'll be curious to see how our Cardinals do. And you know, congratulations to Chris Carpenter. And, hey, there were some other guys that went in too, but Chris Carpenter was the guy that, you know, for me. I mean, Joe Torre, pretty neat for that guy to finally be in. He kind of said he felt always like he was an outsider, but now he's part of Cardinal history. So great for him as well. But we hope you guys enjoy the show, of course. You know, keep on listening. Love to hear from you guys, especially right now while we're still getting everything up and running. Birds on a Bat Show is our Twitter handle. Make sure you guys do that. But from Jimbo, from Steve, from Fish, we're going to let you guys off the hook here and enjoy a great weekend of Cardinal baseball. And we'll be back here on Monday to kind of see how we're doing and where we sit. Have a great weekend.
Go Birds.
Go Red Birds.
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.